Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
In much less detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Here are your hosts, Jay and Dre.
Y'all know what time it is? It's time for In Much Less Detail, the podcast, here with you live on a Wednesday night, October the 18th, 2017. I'm Dre, he's Jay. Whew, what a week six in the NFL. Lots of news, lots of events, lots of bad news for a couple of different teams with injury situations. One very, very close to Jason Tart there in his home state. We will obviously get to that. We'll try to figure out how the last undefeated team, the Kansas City Chiefs, became defeated at the hands of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Get to all of that coming up on this show. I need to start off with this. Right off the bat with our terrible records, I was 6-8 for this week in week six. Jason was 5-9. And I want to bring that up just because I have this massive ego, which is also very sensitive. So I need to break this down in a way that makes me feel better about things. I had a crappy night bowling tonight. I can't believe how inconsistent I am, even with the new bowling ball that I bought. I'm feeling sensitive right now. I'm feeling like I need some reinforcement. So I'm breaking it down this way. Jason's talked about how crazy the season has seemed, how upside down it seemed, unpredictable. I remember what I said on the preview show, on the season preview show. I don't remember too many other people saying this. I said this league was wide fucking open this year. There's a lot of people. Obviously, NBC had something invested in saying that the Patriots were going to go 19-0 and dominate on Thursday night before the season began, and the Chiefs took care of that real quick. But I don't think a lot of other people were saying that the league was so wide open this year. I think most people had this favorite, that favorite. I didn't think any of the favorites were any kind of lock. Of course, I'm the one picking the Texans to go to the Super Bowl. So obviously I'm thinking way outside the box as far as that goes. But I'm the one that said this league was completely wide open. That's exactly the way it looks. Jason, does it not look completely wide open to you? Anybody, just about anybody, can win the Super Bowl this year. Anybody can make the playoffs this year. This league is just it's crazy right now. It's completely upside down.
I think what's more stunning is it's taking you this long to figure it out. This whole thing's been this way all year long. Anybody can beat anybody. Well, unless you're Cleveland, I guess anybody can beat anybody.
Or San Francisco.
Or San Francisco. Although San Francisco, you know what? They're trying. I'm going to give them – I'll give them some points for effort. But, you know, they're at least in games. So, yeah, they haven't gotten a win yet, but they haven't the last four games, I want to say, that they've been hanging around. They've competed. So they haven't completely just given up yet.
It's not just hanging around, it's close. First team in NFL history are the 49ers to lose five games in a row by 3 points or less. It's incredible.
That's hard to do.
That is really hard to do.
Means that they are not able to quite seal the deal. Not good finishers, I would guess, would be the way to say it on that team.
You can check the competitive box, but not the know-how-to-win box, not yet.
No, that's not an overly talented squad either way. And I mean, we're not here to talk about the San Francisco 49ers and the Cleveland Browns. That's a couple shows from now. That's when we get into Halloween time. They'll get their due. Those teams will get talked about. But the whole thing this year has been it's just seriously it's bizarro league football right now. If each week we go in, it's almost impossible to look at it. You make your picks, and you just don't feel good about them at all. I haven't felt good about hardly any picks this year. Even the picks that look, you know, like
Or you pull I pulled last week and say how great I felt about my picks, and it didn't matter anyway because they went to shit.
No. No, I sit there, I look through, I do what I always do. I go up and down, and I make them, and it's like, you know, I could just as easily just flip these all the other way. And if I would do that, I'd actually be in really good shape. It just shows you how crazy the season's been, and, you know, even after your crazy start for how good you were doing. I know your record still is really good, but even the last couple of weeks have to have you scratching your head too.
Oh, I feel terrible about the last few weeks. I just a stepladder, way right down the line. My record has just gone from in the 700s down to the 600s down to might be under. Yeah, I'm under 600 now. Now I'm in the 500. So it's just steadily going down. I was up there in the clouds. My head was all big and I was feeling really good and just steadily rang right on down. So not a good feeling at all.
No, and it finds a way to even itself out. And it's been, yeah, your whole parlay last week with the teams coming off of the buys, yeah, that didn't go so well. You know, so I did some damage against you on those games, lost some close ones. So, you know,
Yeah. I deserve all of this for that.
Yeah, so you get me back. Yeah, so you got me back on some of the close ones, which you always do. At least over the last two plus seasons, seems like if there's anything that's going to be decided by just a few points, you win that pick. So, you know, it all evens out. I'm just waiting.
Taking all the wins I can.
I'm just waiting for that to start evening out because it's going to even out, and it usually evens out in a big way.
Man, those four bye teams, I thought they just had it lined up perfectly, and the Falcons completely shit the bed, take a big lead and find a way to lose to the fucking Dolphins. Who else came off a bye? The Redskins didn't cover against the Niners because the Niners compete against everybody, apparently. And then the Giants on Sunday night decide to just, we're going to raise up and play like professionals, and this was their Super Bowl. I said the Jets were playing like it was going to be their Super Bowl against the Patriots, which they did, but the Giants played even more like it was their Super Bowl. That was an unbelievable effort they turned in at Denver. In all phases of the game, they were excellent, and the Broncos, I don't know what that was. They came off a bye. Sometimes I guess you come off a bye and you're not quite ready to go. Maybe you relax a little too much on your bye week and you don't come back quite ready to play. Maybe that happened to the Falcons as well.
You know, the Falcons came out looking hot, you know, and they got out to that 17-0 lead, but I think, you know, we've seen from them that they're just that offense isn't quite the same as what it was last year. And, you know, even with Vic, you know, I remember watching some of the proceedings in that game and going, oh, you know, they got Vic Beasley back. I'm like, okay, this is looking good. Yeah, even though I'm gonna probably lose this pick because of the way that the Dolphins are playing and the Falcons are playing, it's not going my way. And then they just shut it down. I don't know if it was the Dolphins' defense or if it was just the Falcons just reverted back to playing some really bad offense. They had going into, I believe it was that final drive where all they needed was the field goal, and then Matt Ryan throws the pick. I mean, this was the old Matt Ryan. This, you know, this was the pre-MVP Matt Ryan. They drive all the way down, and then the soul-crushing interceptions come out. They were in field goal range. I didn't understand it at all. 30 yards of offense going into that final drive for the second half. 30 yards.
We're up 17-0 before that collapse happens. Yeah, there's really no explanation for that. Jay Cutler leading a comeback against Atlanta is about as much evidence as you need of how topsy-turvy this season has been. I'm a little afraid that Atlanta might suck. Maybe that's an overreaction on my part, but they have not impressed. They've looked like they've had moments where they've looked like they might have some of the last year's Falcons still kind of in there a little bit, but most for the most part, my impression over the season so far is that they're definitely not the same team. Neither one of us expected them to be the same team, but you lose a 17-0 lead to Jay Cutler and the Dolphins without probably his favorite weapon, Devontae Parker. There's really no explanation for that. You cannot do that if you're the Atlanta Falcons. I'm kind of worried about them over the rest of the season.
Yeah, let's not forget that they're two fourth quarter, I mean, basically end of the game, fourth down stops, basically away from being 1-4.
Yeah, that's another reason they might suck. They could have easily lost to the Bears. They probably should have lost to the Lions. They've got some skin of their teeth wins so far this year, and maybe the glass slippers come off of Cinderella.
We're seeing the glass slippers come off of everybody. There is no one is safe right now. It doesn't matter. It just seems like it's going to find teams, even in surefire situations. You know, you mentioned the Broncos. There's no way that the Giants, they're dead. The Giants aren't going to go on the road to Denver. Come on. That's not going to happen, and then it happens. You know, Aaron Rodgers breaks his collarbone. We all saw that happening. You know, we saw Adrian Peterson basically coming back from the dead. So zombie Adrian Peterson, zombie AP, I guess we could call him now. We ended up getting a quarterbacking war between interception Santa and turnover Bernie Sanders in the same game.
Yeah. An interception Santa eventually gives up the last, or actually he comes out on top, 38-33. Yeah. The Cardinals beat the Buccaneers. Yeah, I don't have any idea how that, in between all of those interceptions and weird plays, they did combine for a lot of yardage, over 600 yards in the air.
Yeah,
just a gunslinging fight breaks out between Jameis Winston and Carson Palmer out of nowhere. I couldn't have predicted that one either.
And you have the Saints blowing the doors off of the Detroit Lions to then realize
happened in that game.
we're one of the worst defenses in history. We better live up to our reputation. And then they just let the Lions come storming. There was a point where I thought we wouldn't even win that pick.
Is there anything that didn't happen in that game? Because I think everything happened. You had dueling defensive tackle pick sixes, right?
Yeah.
Crazy was it a 30-point lead that the Saints had, or somewhere around there?
It was in that area.
Before the Lions just decided to start coming back. I was talking in the last show about the New Orleans defense might actually be decent. When you let a comeback like that happen against a quarterback that's clearly hobbled, and that was another, to me, storyline of the weekend, was hobbled quarterbacks trying to gut their way through performances, and it didn't work out for a couple of them. It did work out for one on Monday night, but Matthew Stafford, clearly not Matthew Stafford, clearly jumping and hobbling around and not able to really have any mobility, not that he has a lot anyway. And the New Orleans defense still let him make a comeback with those receivers that can't get any separation. They found a way to get some separation late in that game somehow. So it looks like, see if you agree with this, the Saints defense is sort of like a bad football player who's good for fantasy. I don't know exactly how, I don't know who would come to mind in that. I guess like goal line running back. Those old fat running backs from back in the day that wouldn't be good for anything. Jerome Bettis at the end of the year, maybe, or at the end of his career, I mean, maybe fits that bill, where he was getting like 3 carries for 3 yards and 3 touchdowns, it seemed. That he wasn't good at football, but he was good for fantasy players because he was getting touchdowns. The Saints defense still, to me, does not strike me as really good defense, but they make plays and they get some touchdowns, some pick sixes, some sacks, some fumbles. They like to fly around a lot and make plays on the ball. They can still get caught easily and have plays run up against them. They still give up a lot of yards because they're not very disciplined. They're still not very defensively sound, but at least they have some playmakers now on that defense that can go, they can win some games by making some big plays and trying to hold the other team at bay after they make those big plays on them.
Yeah, they're still terrible, though. I mean, so you know, you can have a playmaking defense. The reason that they have a playmaking defense is because nobody's afraid of them.
Right.
So those guys are, so they give up all the big ones. Every once in a while, there's enough athleticism there that they get one back. That's not going to get you very far.
Yeah, but that's such an upgrade over them the last 5 years, though, where they weren't even making plays. They were just getting gashed.
No. No, yeah, it's a step
in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, is there light at the end of the tunnel? I mean, I don't know. Maybe they won't be historically bad, but they've been historically bad over a 3 or 4 year stretch here to begin with. They're just terrible.
Well,
it couldn't stay that bad forever.
Well, it could if you're over and over. The Cleveland Browns are going to stay that bad forever because they're just bad and there's nothing they can do.
That will turn itself around someday. Someday the Browns will be relevant again. Someday. Might be a while. Eventually it'll happen. They'll just luck into something someday.
That was my take from the Saints game, is that for the purposes of playing them against the spread, you might not want to dismiss the defense completely. They might not be good, but at least they seem to be flying around and making plays, and they might get a few backdoor covers before the season's over.
Yeah, but good luck trying to predict when those are going to be. That's the trick.
But that's the fun. That's why we pick the games.
Yeah, nothing's coming easy this year.
All right, the obvious news story of the weekend, your breakdown and your viewpoint of everything surrounding the Aaron Rodgers injury, your thoughts about the play itself, the Anthony Barr hit, and any thoughts on the prospects with Brett Hundley under center for Green Bay.
At first glance, I mean, I know you can slow anything down to make it look insidious. I didn't see a major problem with the hit. It didn't even look that vicious. And in fact, when you look at the way Rodgers went to the ground, it wasn't even in the typical way where you see somebody who's, you know, sort of perpendicular to the ground, getting basically their shoulders compressed into the turf. And that's where you would usually see like the shoulder separation or the collarbone break. And Rodgers was sort of almost half laying down under Barr on the play after he threw the ball. In real time, when it happened, it didn't look. I didn't see a penalty. There was no flag thrown. And keep in mind, no flag was thrown in a NFL where the tendency is to throw the flag every time the wind blows too hard by the quarterback. So I think of it as an unfortunate incident, unlucky. It's a repeat, I believe, of an injury. So it could have been there was some susceptibility there to have that happen again.
I think he had broke his left collarbone before, and this was his.
Yeah, so Aaron Rodgers has proven over the years that he's not the most durable guy. He's not a huge guy. He does get hurt. He is a bit fragile back there. And he does take a lot of hits behind that woeful offensive line, and they finally got to him. And I don't think anyone is shocked with the amount of hits that he's received over the last couple and a half seasons of that sort of makeshift offensive line. They announced before the game that the Packers were finally going to have their whole offensive line, and the two guys, Bakhtiari and Bulaga, both decided to get hurt again in the game. Mike McCarthy seemed very afraid of running any offense with Brett Hundley, and he threw a bad pick early, even though it was a deflection. It was a ball he was trying to force into traffic that he probably shouldn't have thrown. He was just locked onto the guy. defender got the hand in the way, and then another guy was Johnny on the spot right there for the pick. And the pick he threw at the end of the game, it's hard to fault anybody for trying to make a play at the end of the game. They'll win a handful of games, I think, with Brett Hundley. I'm not going to say that he's horrible and the Packers don't win another game. But if Rodgers truly is done for the rest of the season, I'd say they might have 3 wins left in them somewhere here. They're definitely not going to go unless they coach Hundley up. And I've seen him play. I saw him play in a preseason game a couple seasons ago when we declared we're not going to preseason games anymore because they're boring. Where when they finally good. So I don't think that they're hopeless, but Aaron Rodgers was basically overcoming their defensive deficiencies. And I don't think Brett Hundley is going to be able to do that. I think that he can play the position, but he's going to basically have to just get into a shootout now with everybody because there's no magic anymore at that position where Rodgers is just going to will that team to victory like he did against the Cowboys, and he's just going to throw them on his backs. They're going to have to win games with Hundley kind of ugly. We'll see if they keep getting anything from this Aaron Jones. I'm the opponent right now. I'm probably stacking up to stop the run and forcing Brett Hundley to beat me against a team with anything more than a league average. I don't think the Packers have much of a chance.
Minnesota certainly stacked the box and made Brett Hundley try to beat them. So that's probably what they're going to see a lot of. So Green Bay goes to 4-2 with this loss. You're saying that if Rodgers does not come back this year, that you see no better than 7-9 for a season record.
Yeah, I'd be if they get to 8, which would be, you know, what, 4 more. That would be 4-6 the rest of the way. I think that would be their ceiling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm about in that same ballpark. As far as the hit goes, I think I saw it exact same way as you, which is was not flagged, should not have been flagged, and surprising that it wasn't flagged because we've seen lesser hits than that get flagged as some referees, I guess some crews, err completely on the side of totally protecting a quarterback and trying to make sure that there's nothing that a defender might get away with as far as potentially injuring and taking out a quarterback. And I thought plays like that, another reason why I was surprised it wasn't flags, because I thought plays just like this is why they're being so careful, so that it doesn't escalate to potentially taking one of the star players in the league and taking him out for the rest of the season. I thought this is what they were protecting against. Again, I agree with you. Should not have been flagged. It's a football play. It's bad luck. But at the same time, I thought this is why they throw those daisy-ass, pansy-ass flags all these years to try to prevent a defender from doing something like this to Aaron Rodgers, to prevent somebody from – to make somebody come up to Aaron Rodgers the way Anthony Barr did and make them completely pull up and almost like maybe risk injuring themselves trying to pull off from running into Aaron Rodgers and driving his shoulder into the ground. But that's not what Anthony Barr did. He kept playing. He went all the way through, and the flag was not thrown. I also think it was close enough that if this game were at Lambeau Field, they probably would have thrown a flag on Anthony Barr. I think the home crowd and the home atmosphere makes a difference in those types of calls as well. But again, for the record, to be clear, I agree with you. I don't think it was a dirty hit, and I don't think that Barr should have been flagged. Was it a little late? Might have been a little late.
Yeah, it was close. Let's say here they do throw the flag. Well, let's say they throw the flag and then they find Anthony Barr. Aaron Rodgers' collarbone isn't going to unbreak itself at that point and suddenly heal.
This is true.
So, again, that's great. But 15 yards and a first down, the Packers still lose that game. You know. The guy's job is to go out and hit the other team's quarterback. Even if they threw the flag, he's still going out off on the meat wagon back to the locker room and jawing at the Viking players, you know, for what he thought might have been a cheap shot. And either way, Aaron Rodgers is still, you know, not there for the rest of the year, whether or not that was a flag or not. Yeah, I mean, all that would have been was, a, you know, 15 yards in the first down for Brett Hundley to do nothing for that game. He didn't do much. Vikings were invigorated at that point.
I believe any breakdown of Brett Hundley's performance and trying to extrapolate needs to have the caveat of tough defense in Minnesota, yep, in their house.
Right.
With a backup quarterback completely not expecting to play when that game began. Completely not expecting. Because
right.
Aaron Rodgers takes the ball.
The Packers host the Saints this week. I think we'll get a much better idea of what
right.
of what Brett Hundley's all about.
If he can take advantage of the defense that makes plays but otherwise leaves people wide open, then he should have some success. That's actually going to be an interesting pick when we have to make it this weekend.
And don't be stunned if we see a little bit of both. Don't be shocked if we see the Packers have some big gains on offense and possibly give something to the Saints as well.
Yeah, that would not be surprising at all. It was very telling what Mike McCarthy thought of handing the reins to Brett Hundley, because the very first play that Hundley comes in after that play against Aaron Rodgers, that left Green Bay with a 3rd and 9 when Hundley came in, and he had Hundley hand off.
Yeah. He did
That's
a lot
how
of
much
that
faith McCarthy first, had in
it. They ran the ball for the first couple series almost exclusively until they finally started trying to work in some passes for Hundley, but watching the game, what was very frustrating was that you were basically watching McCarthy putting Hundley into obvious passing situations, and you don't want to do that against the Vikings. The run on first down, run on second down, oh crap, it's 3rd and 8. Now we got to throw the ball. That wasn't, it was almost like a give up play by them. And they were never in that game. And, you know, never, even when Aaron Jones was running the ball okay, he wasn't great, but he was chugging. No play action, just very, you know, I don't know if that was just the coaches got caught completely by surprise almost as well as Hundley did,
right,
because they were not prepared. But again, preparation and the Packers is, you know, those don't go hand in hand.
You know, I was thinking about you and your criticism of McCarthy over the years while I was watching that. You were on my mind. Trust me. I was thinking about you a lot watching this.
Yeah, because you could imagine me just sitting there just lambasting McCarthy with whatever crowd of people I was happening to watch that game with at the time, because that was basically what I was doing.
Yeah,
critiquing him for putting Hundley into terrible passing situations. Not, you know, not working off of the running game at all. No, and again, no adjustments.
First time he decided to have Hundley throw was on a 3rd and 2. And it was almost, I'm not going to play the Benny Hill music, but it was almost reminiscent of that Bears sequence where they called timeout and then wind up getting a penalty anyway out of the timeout for delay of game. This was almost as bad, where they got a 3rd and 2. Hundley has to call timeout, come back on the field, throws a tip drill interception. It's like, why would you call? You call the timeout so you can throw an interception. You could have done that without calling a timeout, dude. Really? It
completely stared the receiver down. Didn't look anywhere else. And, you know, that might work against a lesser defense. But, yeah, not a good spot that you want to come into for your first somewhat meaningful NFL action, other than, like, you know, maybe a little kneel down territory or something. But he also had a few bright spots in the game. So you know, I don't think that they're as bad off as, you know, some teams where, you know, the backup comes in and the guy's just completely lost. But I'm going to reserve my total judgment on Brett Hundley until we get to see, you know, with a week of practice, being the number one, you know, working everything, see if he learns from some of those mistakes. Let's see how he operates that offense this week.
Yeah, my takeaway is you look at the box score, you see the 3 picks, and you think, oh, this kid is trash, but you have to actually watch these games to make some of these judgments. You're right. He did have some good throws. He had the Davante Adams touchdown. He had to scramble to make time for himself and find him on the left side. He had a good quick slant to Randall Cobb to convert a 3rd down. He had a good out route to Jordy Nelson. Those are all sort of Mike McCarthy basics, or, you know, the Mike McCarthy starter kit. Those are some of the throws that are in there, and he was able to execute some of those. I don't think he's going to be a complete disaster. I don't think that he's going to have anywhere near the success that Aaron Rodgers is. Believe me, I'm not saying that, but I am saying he's viable. He's going to actually be pretty decent in the spot in place of Aaron Rodgers, not a complete disaster, not Brian Hoyer, not Jake McCrown, not any of these other losers, not Blake Bortles. I like him. I think he showed some moxie in there. No, I'm not going to go John Gruden either, but he showed some.
Yeah, and that one preseason game that I was at where he played almost exclusively for the whole game, it was Scott Tolzien for the first quarter, and then it was Brett Hundley the rest of the way. And he looked good, you know, so I can see why they hung on to him as the backup. I believe they practice squatted this kid the first year and, you know, have had him on the roster as either the third stringer or the second stringer now the last couple of years. Packers are not a team that, you know, traditionally hangs on to these backups. They hung on to him. You know, so, you know, they wasn't one of these guys who was left unprotected or any of that. So I'm interested, I guess, would be the best word to see how this goes for them.
I'm interested too. I'm a little scared behind that offensive line. It might be a disaster,
You said the key word, the key phrase there when you were talking about him having to dance around to create, because get used to it, kid. You're going to be doing a lot of that.
Yeah.
But Joe Callahan better be ready.
Get your dancing shoes on.
Yeah.
Got 28 minutes left in the live show. If you want to let your opinion be known, we are here. This goes to 11. Goes to 11 Central Time. You can always call in a area code 646-595-4534. You can always leave us a note via email. You'll send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can always leave a tweet. I'm at IMLDDre on Twitter. Jason is at IMLDJTG. Our picks are always up on the blog. Our blog site is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. You are listening live, of course, on blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. To listen to the show as a podcast, you can sign up on Apple Podcasts or through many, many other different podcasting apps. So that's the Brett Hundley breakdown. Again, take it with a grain of salt. He's playing against the Minnesota Vikings in their house, so it's going to be tough. What is the Kansas City Chiefs breakdown? How do you go 5-0 and then host the struggling Pittsburgh Steelers in your building and let Ben Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell kind of run all over you like that?
I'm going to say it was mostly Le'Veon Bell. And, you know, in the history, I guess we didn't pay much attention to Le'Veon Bell. Third game in a row for him, I guess, over 150 yards against the Chiefs. He's clearly got their number. You know, and every once in a while you're going to have a team lay an egg. And the Chiefs clearly laid an egg. Maybe they were starting to feel a little overconfident, you know, that maybe they needed this as sort of a wake-up call. And the Steelers, again, a proud team, you know, been knocked down the last few weeks, bad losses. And they showed up. Now, towards the end of that game, I believe there was a when the Chiefs were trying to mount their comeback, the Steelers, Roethlisberger threw almost completely ill-advised throw that ended up going for a touchdown that should have been picked. It ends up being a deflection to Antonio Brown, who takes it the rest of the way. But I caught that part of the game on the radio as I was driving home from work, and I believe it was Mike Mayock on the call, and he was just shredding Roethlisberger for his decision making in that game and on that play, and just ripping him to absolute pieces, talking about how, yeah, that ended up being a touchdown for the Steelers and it's going to look great on the stats, but it was a terrible throw, it was ill-advised, and yeah, it was, and that probably would have turned the tide of the game. I think the Chiefs were starting to make that comeback, and that was sort of the backbreaker. And that put it out of reach with not that much time left to go in the game. So I think the Chiefs started to wake up, and you get a bad bounce. You know, you get a guy that basically has his hand on the ball and should pick it, have it deflect into the receiver's hand, and he takes it. I think it was a 51-yard touchdown pass at the end of it. pretty much walked in untouched. But the overall consensus from what I saw early in that game and late is that was Le'Veon Bell show. And Big Ben was still a little rusty, still making some bad decisions, making some tough throws, trying to squeeze the ball into places he shouldn't have. So it's just one of those where the Chiefs lose. You know, nobody's going 16-0. I mean, if the Chiefs finish out the season 13-3, I don't think anybody's going to look at them going into the playoffs going, oh, they're bums. They're still pretty good. They're still pretty good.
Actually, it's Kansas City, so they might say they're bums because that's kind of what they do.
Well, this is what they do.
You put together really, really good regular seasons and then get into the playoffs and something like this game would happen, like it did against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
If they play the Steelers again, yeah, come playoff time, you might want to stop Le'Veon Bell.
I'm upset that I missed a good Mike Mayock rant because there's very few things more entertaining than an angry Mike Mayock. Because when he gets his dander up about something, he goes in. So I'm sure that was entertaining. Yeah, when it's not your day, it's not your day is what I will put that play under. I watched the whole game, so I saw that play. Ben targets Antonio Brown on third down. The ball goes right through Philip Gaines' hands and off his head into Brown's arms, and he avoids Daniel Sorensen coming for the ball the other side. And winds up going 51. It was one of the more unbelievable plays I've seen in quite a while. And you're right, it was the Chiefs had made it 12-10 at that point in favor of Pittsburgh. It was 12-3 in the second half, and that was a fourth quarter touchdown by the Chiefs to make it 12-10. And it was like, they've been playing like crap all day, but they're about to mount this big rally. And then that throw happens to make it 19-10. Pittsburgh basically salted the game away. It was the Le'Veon Bell game. It was the game plan that the Steelers should have had versus Jacksonville last week, or else people might not have been talking about Pittsburgh all this week, and Ben might not have been in the media doubting himself and saying, maybe I don't have it anymore. If they just would have done this last week, then maybe they wouldn't be having existential crises coming into this game, and maybe it would have been something where we wouldn't have fallen into the trap, and we might have actually picked the Steelers instead of both going with the Chiefs. But, it was quite the sight to see Pittsburgh come out completely relying on the run, even so much that they had a couple of runs on their very first series. They had a run from someone named Terrell Watson. I have no idea who that is. That was on a 3rd-and-1. They did not give it to Le'Veon Bell. They gave it to this Watson guy, and he got the first down. It was like, whoa, okay. They really are going to be committed to the run today. And later on in that same series, they had a good run on the left side by someone named James Conner. Who are these guys? So they were all over the run right from the get-go, and that was the game plan. And the guys bitching in the media about the game plan, apparently it worked, and Todd Haley and Mike Tomlin listened. And on the other side, Kansas City have been talking about these interior offensive linemen being missing, the center Mitch Morse and the guard Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, and it finally came back to really bite them because Mitch Morse's backup center, Zach Fulton, is the one that snapped the punt over the head of, it wasn't a punt, but it was it was a snap over the quarterback's head out of the back of the end zone to give Pittsburgh the first 2 points of the game. And that sort of set the tone. It felt like from there, Kansas City was sort of playing on their heels and trying to play from behind. They did take a 3-2 lead, but Pittsburgh, going back to Le'Veon Bell, just kept running and wound up with a lead that felt bigger than it was. In fact, at one point, Pittsburgh's leading 12-3 in the third quarter. They could not connect on a third down play. And instead of kicking a 53-yard field goal, I definitely wanted to make note of this, the Steelers passed on a 53-yard field goal and punted the ball up 12-3 in the third quarter because the Kansas City offense was such a non-factor on this day. They were so not a threat. The Steelers' D was fast. They were really played the way that they want to play. This is how the Steelers see themselves in their own image, is fast to the ball, like kind of like the Falcons, making plays and hurrying the quarterback and making sure they don't have any time to do anything. They were playing like that. This is the bifactor of the running game doing what it's doing, running clock, possessing the ball, making sure that the defense gets rested. The Steelers' defense was so fast and so rested when they got on the field because they were standing over there just champing at the bit and ready to go. And that's another part of running the ball is you get your defense a chance to rest up and be ready to really make a big impact. And what happens at the end of the game, on the very last series, here comes 95-year-old Methuselah James Harrison around the corner to make a big sack and snuff out the Chiefs' last drive because the defense is rested and ready to make impact plays because the running game has taken up so much of the time of possession.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the way I saw it and heard it too. Is, you know, I agree with you on that point when they punted. In fact, it was right about the point when I was getting in my car, and there it is on the radio, basically, the crew doing the game talking about the Steelers passing up the field goal just because they knew that the Chiefs couldn't do anything at all against them. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, at that point, you're up by two scores. So, you know, you actually run the risk at that point of missing the field goal and giving the Chiefs the ball basically at midfield. Why give them any momentum? Just keep pushing them deep. Just keep pushing them back. Nice try, guys, you know. And it ended up working out. So, yeah, give credit to the Steelers. But this is no different than what we've seen happening to the Steelers the last few weeks. Bad losses at home or a bad loss on the road. You know, the Chiefs played a better-than-average opponent. I mean, the Steelers are a little bit better than average. They're not a great team, but they're good enough that you'll get an effort like this from them. And the Chiefs clearly need to trade for Le'Veon Bell. He's their Achilles heel.
Or hire a woman to get him in a paternity situation and take his mind out of the game or something like that. I don't know. I'm just spitballing. I'm just throwing ideas out there. Did you hear about Martavis Bryant being unhappy after all of this and maybe wanting a trade out of Pittsburgh? So that it's not all completely roses in Pittsburgh right now.
It hasn't been. It hasn't been. You had all the anthem drama going on with them, and you know Mike Tomlin going out in the media. Now you got Martavis. It's just nobody's ever happy. Nobody's just happy with anything anymore. This is the everybody just hates everything now. This is what we've just come to.
What else did you want to get to in week six of the NFL this week?
Again, crazy week. I mean, that Monday night game, you had, you know, the Jake Brisket trying to go on the road and beat the Titans and, you know, pulling it off. I mean, they were 22-22. I mean, that game ended up being a two-touchdown game, but it was only because it got away late with a couple of late touchdowns that the Colts were right there. Once again, at least the Titans did what I said they should do, which was run, 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 and they did.
The Colts had a 19-9 lead on Tennessee before immobile Marcus Mariota and that running game sort of restored some normalcy to the proceedings there. And they had to run the ball because Mariota wasn't going to be much help back there, at least when he got pressure, because his hamstring clearly was not anywhere near 100%. Like I said, it was a weekend of watching hurt quarterbacks play, even outside of Aaron Rodgers getting hurt. There was Mariota with his hammy, there was Stafford with his ankle completely immobile. Derek Carr with that broken back, not broke back, that's different, but with that broken back, I don't know. I don't think he looked exactly the same. I don't know if you noticed that. He didn't look good playing for the Raiders, as far as I'm concerned.
He was missing a lot of throws that he normally makes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that didn't help them at all. Not good. We had the bet. We didn't even talk about our highlight game, our Rams and Jags. Jaguars did a nice job of hanging in there, except for, oh no, they gave up two special teams touchdowns. That's never going to win you a game.
No. Yeah. Right when those games start to lead off the games. very first kickoff.
And they came right back. You know, Leonard Fournette goes 75 yards, and it's like, boom, boom.
Yeah.
I think there was, 18 seconds or 20 seconds or some crazy low number off the clock in that game, and we had a 7-7 game.
It was fireworks very, very early. That team, the Jaguars, could be so dangerous if they had a passable quarterback.
Oh, my God. They could be.
Oh, well. I think they all see it, too. I think they know what's going down there, and I'm pretty sure there'll be somebody else under center next season. They probably should make a move now. I don't know for who exactly, but Blake Bortles is a disaster, and they need to really move on from him because he is not the answer.
Yeah. But, yeah, there's other than going to the backup, there's really nothing. You're not going to sign a guy off of the street to come in, you know, and try and get up to speed with the offense and everything and expect any long-term success. No, they're going to be this way all year, and they're going to have flashes with that defense and that running game are going to be able to, you know, put them over, but don't expect Blake Bortles to come out, especially if you're behind, and throw you to a victory. It ain't going to happen.
God, it's such an awful thing to watch. Remember how I used to talk about watching Alex Smith try to lead a comeback was the worst thing to watch on all of television? Watching Blake Bortles trying to lead a comeback is even worse than Alex Smith because he's had no clue.
Yeah, Brock Osweiler is fitting into the Osweiler role, huh? Blake Bortles?
I don't ever need to see him play quarterback again either. I don't need to see him or Bortles or Blaine Gabbert. Guys, I don't ever need to see play the quarterback position.
So calling him Blake Osweiler.
Because they're basically the same guy.
Yeah, or Brock Bortles.
It all fits together. It all makes sense to me.
Brock Bortles. It's what I'm going to start calling him now because that's basically what you're getting. You're getting a guy who's not even qualifying as a game manager.
Time for another edition of We Don't Know What the Fuck a Catch Is Anymore. You see that Jets highlight?
And you use the term loosely. There was a touchdown in the Packers game that looked like a touchdown until you slowed it down frame by frame. And it was Hundley over the middle to Ty Montgomery, and he was kind of bumbling into the end zone, and the ball crosses the plane, but then he hits the ground and the ball pops out. I thought as soon as the ball crossed the plane, the play was over.
Unless he has to complete the process. Or something.
Yeah. This is where the technology hurts. And I'm, you know, and you and I are both big supporters of getting it right and using the technology. But when you're, when you're splitting hairs to figure out what's a catch and, you know, and I think people are just mad. Yeah. I think that people are just mad because this is another thing that just goes the Patriots way. you know, not just another one, and you know, they're on the ropes. They probably should have lost that game. They deserved to, and they ended up getting a win because we don't know what the hell a catch is anymore.
Our guy, Austin Safarian Jenkins, or Austin Safarius Jenkins, as Bryce from Brooklyn might say, looked like he had clear possession to me after recovering his bobble, but the rule apparently that they seized upon was that it turns into after you're running with the ball, you can be running with the ball for yards and yards and yards, but as you approach the end zone, if you fumble the ball, if you have officially lost possession, it then, as you recover your own fumble, it then turns into a complete the process type of situation. So it wasn't enough that Safarian Jenkins recovered his own fumble, hit the pylon, and then the ball started moving around a little bit as he hit the ground, but he still maintained possession. They ruled it not a touchdown because after he fumbled and recovered and then hit the pylon and the ball started moving around. Therefore, the ball moving around means he didn't complete the process of recovering his own fumble. Therefore, it's a touchback and the Patriots get the ball. I mean, I don't understand how you can split hairs and call that a fumble and not completing the process and it's a touchback. You got to really have the finest points of the rule in order to cite that and say that it's not a touchdown. And what makes it even more frustrating is that it was officially initially called a touchdown on the field and they had to go to that and right. say in New York that it was definitely enough evidence to overturn the touchdown call on the field, which I don't see how you could say it was definitely enough evidence to overturn.
You know, and the way I look at it is if they want to try it all to say about the process of the catch, if you don't complete the process of the catch, it's incomplete.
Right, but this was a fumble.
And if you're a runner, then there is no process of the catch. Then it's just the ball breaks the plane. So you can't have it both ways. You can't have the runner not complete the process of the catch, because if it's a fumble, you clearly have possession. You can't fumble a ball that you don't possess, and you can't complete the process of a catch that's not a catch. I literally think they made up a rule on the spot.
Well, I'm laughing
because one has nothing to do with the other. You can't have both. He can't be a runner and a receiver at the same time. Once you are a runner, all you have to do is break the plane.
Well, even taking them at their word that it's the process of recovering the fumble. If you recover the fumble, you recover the fumble. I don't know why you have to recover the fumble
now,
and make sure that the ball doesn't move even a little bit as you go to the ground.
I didn't look at it with precise detail. Did the ball pop out before he crossed the goal line?
He fumbled the ball right as he was approaching the goal line, picked it back up and recovered his own fumble. The call, the reason it was overturned and made a touchback is because they say that once you fumble the ball, now the recovery of your fumble turns it into a process of the catch/fumble situation. That's why it was such a controversy. If he had never fumbled the ball, crossed the goal line and the ball came out, he was a runner at that point, so it would have been a touchdown. But because he fumbled before getting to the goal line, then it became a recovery of the fumble, became complete the process of recovering the fumble situation. But I think that's a bad rule, because if you recover the fumble, that should be that moment that you recover, it should be all good.
Yeah, and I was under the impression that you couldn't recover your own fumble down the field anyways.
That's like,
so then at that point, are they just saying that he fumbled the ball out of the end zone?
Rule 14.35.6b or whatever, that in certain situations you cannot advance your own fumble. That's true. But I don't think it applied in this case.
That's the problem.
It's so crazy. Yeah, yeah. It makes your head spin.
If you can't, you know, just have it be, don't have it be in certain situations. Just have the rule say you can't advance your own fumble and the ball goes back to where you fumbled it, which is what we're used to. So you have all of these outcomes, you know, and plus the actual play on the field, which looks like a touchdown. Like you said, they had to see enough not just to, you know,
it's supposed to be clear evidence to overturn what was called on the field. And
sometimes I think these guys want to find stuff. You know, their job is to overturn, you know, this is their job. And I think they were trying, sometimes I think these guys are going out of their way to show how smart they are. And we just get new rules on the fly. Because I think to almost every casual observer, that was a touchdown.
It was to me. I'm just laughing at how they made that new rule this year where it's not the referees even making this judgment call to uphold or overturn. It's all the guys in New York that are making these calls. So the referees are standing there scratching their nuts, looking at the replay on the sideline, but they don't have any say in the call. The call is going to be confirmed or overturned by the guys in New York. So the referees don't, they make the touchdown call and then they sit there and watch the guys in New York decide that it needs to be overturned and given to made it a touchback and give the advantage to the Patriots. That's got to be just infuriating if you're an official. And you go, how on God's earth do you say that that's enough evidence to overturn my call of a touchdown? That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I didn't see it. You know, and again, the team that probably deserved to win the game didn't.
Well, and that's another thing. If the Jets could stop Rob Gronkowski, then they would have won the game anyway, despite that terrible call,
yeah.
But they couldn't stop Gronk. So, but very few teams can, so I don't really blame them for that. But that was their Super Bowl. That was gangrene coming out and saying, we are feeling good. We have won 3 in a row. We are going to do all we can to knock off the Patriots. And damn it, they almost did it. So hats off to them. Hats off to the Giants for stopping their winless season and putting forth a professional effort against Denver. I don't expect much from either one of those teams the rest of the way.
You mean the Patriots or the Jets?
No, the Giants or the Jets.
Oh, the Giants or the Jets. Okay, sorry. Zoned out there for a second.
That's all right. I'm used to it. People stop listening to me when I start talking all the time. That's fine.
I'm not on all cylinders here tonight.
I see. How about Orleans Darkwa? How about Orleans Sparkwa on Sunday night?
Yeah, I saw that he had a nice game, so I thought of you right away as soon as I saw Sparkwa that's his one game, and now he's done again.
That's it. Right. Don't pick him up in fantasy because he's finished.
No.
Trust me.
No. And it seems like when he does it, it's in prime time. So only pick him up if the Giants have another prime time game.
And did you see the tweet that the Hub Arkish tweet that I tried to forward to you on Sunday, where he was referencing Mitch Trubisky? And
uh-huh.
it should be on your timeline if you didn't see it. But
I did see it.
It was okay. It was central casting about the point that you make about babying Mitch Trubisky and any little thing that he does, going, "Oh, that's a good boy. That's a
Patting him on the head. You're patting him on the head every time he does the slightest little thing that's good, because they're just so desperate to see anything good apparently at that position that any bright spot that Mitch Trubisky shows, they are just going to fawn completely over him. And we called that. We called that on the show. And there it was.
I'm not going to pat him on the head. I'm a Bears fan, so I'm just going to say, fuck yeah, way to go, Mitch Trubisky, getting that big win in overtime at Baltimore. It wasn't a whole lot that he did to win that game. It was pretty much the running game. But nonetheless, I said, if he can get that win over the veteran Baltimore Ravens team, that I would be very impressed. And ultimately, they won the game and covered the spread and showed me a lot. I'm very happy for them, even though you won that pick and I didn't.
That was one of the ones I had, yes.
On Thursday Night Football tomorrow night, it's an AFC West showdown between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Oakland Raiders, who are both coming off disappointing efforts. Only have 3 days to recover and figure things out. Chiefs, once again, those two offensive linemen will not be playing. No Shark Tank either, no Sharkandrick West in the backfield. For Oakland, Garyon Conley, the rookie cornerback, will once again be absent. Kansas City, still 5-1 after that loss, so they're the better team by record, and they're the better team by the betting public. They give 3 points. KC is -3 at the 2-4 Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, until I see anything better here out of Derek Carr than we saw last week against not the best team over there with the Clippers, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to take the Chiefs to bounce back. Maybe losing is the best thing that could have happened to them.
I concur. I was very unimpressed by Derek Carr. I think he's trying to gut through, not 100%, not anywhere near 100%, but you saw what EJ Manuel was doing the last game. So he said, I'm going to come be a hero and play for my guys. Didn't quite work out for them. And as I pointed out the last show as well, even if he's on the field, he's not in sync with his receiving core right now. Michael Crabtree is having a fabulous season, but Amari Cooper, they're not really connecting. So I agree. I don't think Oakland is where they want to be at all right now, and I'm going to take the Chiefs to cover the 3 and bounce back as well. More on our after show when we come back. And now into our VIP after show program. Yeah, you're not 100% tonight. We canceled a show that we were going to have last night because you were under the weather. So yeah, you're playing hurt gutting through tonight. I'm not 100% myself. I'm in a little bit of extra pain after my bowling league tonight and extra frustration. So I'm glad I was able to make it through this show without completely throwing the computer to the side and getting completely blowed up at something.
Yeah, I had 2 nights in a row here before this before tonight where I was in bed by 7:30 a couple nights in a row. Just yeah, just completely, you know, worn out, and there's a lot of flu going around here, but it doesn't seem like it's the flu that got me. It's been more of just like a general, I don't know what the like fatigue, you know, more than anything. Yeah. Sinuses and allergies and just sore and tired. Like, I mean, just like literally, like, just all you want to do is just lay down. It's a very weird feeling.
I assume you guys' temperature dropped pretty big in the last few days because ours has down here in the South. So
it did, but then it went back up again. So we've been near 70 today. We were near 70. We're supposed to be near 70 again the next couple of days. And then it's supposed to rain for 3 or 4 days and then be back in like in the 40s. This is when everybody gets sick. When you start to get these crazy, wild temperature changes, you know, in summer just doesn't want to quite let go. Winter wants to start taking effect because, you know, we're only, what, 2 weeks away from, you know, a little under 2 weeks away from Halloween here. And that's usually when we start to see snow fly, not accumulate. But that, you know, maybe a little on the grass or a little on the rooftops, you know, and we start getting towards Thanksgiving and we start anticipating snowstorms. And, you know, we're already into the middle of October and still talking about 70 degree days.
Yeah, that's pretty warm for you guys up there. No doubt about it. We're used to those type of temperatures down here, but it dropped low enough a couple days ago. I think it was yesterday morning. I actually broke out my jacket for the first time since before the baseball season started. So obviously for that to happen down here, it's got to be rather chilly. And I assume that's why I'm extra achy tonight after bowling, is because it's a little bit of a chill in the air here down south. The air conditioner was not running in the house all day for the first day in quite a while. It's turning into that type of year right now.
Well, I'm sure living down there now for the last several years, you get used to the warmer weather and not having to deal with the winter and the snow and the sub-zero temperatures all the time.
Definitely used to it. I'm definitely spoiled. I've completely, that trip up to Chicago last weekend or weekend before that, rather, I completely forgot to pack a jacket. I spent, and that's unheard of. October trip, weekend trip in Chicago, Illinois, and I didn't have a jacket. I got completely lucky that it was sort of an Indian summer up there and that it was warm enough where I didn't really need the jacket. I didn't miss the jacket even though it was raining that Saturday night. It was still warm enough where I wasn't just like tortured and chilly and feeling like a complete boob for not having a coat. That's rare. That is rare in October in Chicago.
Yeah, so we'll see, but yeah, if we don't have anything major tonight, I'm getting ready to hit the bed here and get up. I got to be up early and get to work, and you know, but I was ready to go to bed about 3 hours ago.
Well, you were a trooper. You hung in there to do the show with us, and that's good. We're very happy for it.
You know, my wife's like, "What are you doing? What do you mean you got a show tonight? You're not feeling good." I said, "I didn't do the show last night." So I could go to bed early. I said, we got to do a show. We got to get the show in before Thursday night so we can make our pick and do our recap. And just, you know, sometimes you just got to take one for the team.
That's right. Now, the only things that I had were shut down corner guy continues his season. He didn't dominate, but he did go 7-7. That's still better than both of us. Yeah. He also
this is how we know. This is proof. This is proof that nothing makes sense. Because this guy's history is not successful.
No, it's not. He also had no line for the Tennessee game, just like we did. So he got the victory straight up. Although, I don't know if
they
you saw
covered.
That dance.
They would have covered whatever the number was. I mean,
they set a line eventually after the news came out that Mariota was going to start. I saw it anywhere between 6.5 and 8.5, depending on when you were looking at it.
Okay.
And because of that garbage time touchdown late by Derrick Henry, they would have covered whatever the spread was. That's true.
Yes.
That was another one of those bad beats for those who took the Colts and the points in that situation.
Oh, yeah. that was a garbage time. That's what I mean. That game was more competitive than the final score indicated.
Yeah, much, much more. Yeah. Like I said, the Colts were actually beating them at 10 points at one point. And just the Adrian Peterson game that we touched down briefly in the live show, but all I wanted to say was that if he's remotely close to a David Johnson replacement for the Cardinals, remotely close, I'm not saying he's going to do everything that David Johnson was doing, but if he's anywhere close, the Cardinals, as far as I'm concerned, will be back in contention, because that's really what that offense has been missing. I know Carson Palmer has been extremely inconsistent, but he's had zero help in the run game. Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington are not anywhere close to a David Johnson replacement. But Adrian Peterson playing like the old AP, that would actually be close enough to having a solid running game, and the Cardinals would be, as far as I'm concerned, right back in there in contention in the NFC.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why not. I mean, the Cardinals, as bad as they've been, and this is the whole point, they've been, I mean, underwhelming, I guess is the best word. And they're 3-3. I mean, so can we, you know, they're a game out of first. Can we really, you know, knock too hard on the Cardinals that they can suddenly, if they can get a running game and take some of the pressure off of Santa Claus, then they might be, you know, a team that you can kind of focus on trusting a little bit more going into the second half of the season. I would trust the Cardinals with that veteran squad, even though they're granted they're trying to have the oldest team in football. I mean, with Palmer, Fitzgerald, and AP. But for a short stretch here, you know, for just that short burst, it might be enough. Because do you trust the Rams? I mean, come on.
Can't say I trust the Rams, no.
And do we trust the Seahawks to pass protect for Russell Wilson? Russell Wilson, do they play the Vikings? Because Anthony Barr might be calling.
And there you go. Playoff contention, because there's one team that's been, as far as we're concerned, eliminated from playoff contention, and that would be the team up there in Wisconsin where you live.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely is going to be a blow. I mean, I think overall, I mean, how much can we trust them? I mean, they have the game this week against the Saints. Then they have a bye. I mean, so we're going to have a really good sense coming out of that bye week in a Monday night game against the Lions at Lambeau. So you got two in a row here at home with a bye week sandwiched in between. They have to split these two games. They lose them both, forget it. They're done.
They're not out of the playoffs completely yet. They're leading this game 3-2 tonight in the eighth inning, but your Cubs are down 3-0 to the LA Dodgers. Any requiem for your Chicago Cubs?
Well, unless there's a miracle that happens here, and you know, figures out they figure out how to pull a Red Sox here from a decade or so ago. I mean, they were flawed all season. I mean, they played hot in the second half, but the team is, you know, clearly got some areas that they need to focus on in the off season, in the hot stove time. They definitely need to shore up that starting rotation. The bullpen's been very iffy. And the thing that I look at, and it hasn't really been talked about, but that has got to be one of, if not the slowest team in baseball. And you want to talk about a team that basically just has to play station to station. They don't steal bases. They, you know, and their defense suffered after they had such a good defensive season last year. I know he's a folk hero, but they got to give up on the whole Kyle Schwarber in left field thing. That he needs to get traded off to the American League. He can go be a DH somewhere.
I know
he's a folk hero. I would have been ecstatic if they would have packaged him up to trade for Darvish at the deadline. Mm. I don't know why they really needed to keep Kyle Schwarber out there playing left field. He's not very good out there. I was envisioning Schwarber and a prospect type trade for Darvish and maybe like the Shields, you know, a player that the Rangers clearly hate and don't want to have. They just hate him. Every time he plays, he produces if they give him any extended playing time, but they hate him. And I could have very easily have seen him in a Cubs uniform getting sporadic starts at the top of that lineup and giving them a actual base stealing threat. And that's something that they just don't have at all. So team speed, terrible. And they definitely need some pitching help. Otherwise it's what we saw last year. When they get hot, they can score in bunches. They hit tons of home runs. Their patience was lacking a lot this year. Last year, it was working a lot of counts, forcing pitchers out of games early, getting into these, you know, bullpens. This year it was, they didn't hit a homer. That was it. Forget it. Show's over. Yeah. So yeah, flawed team. But again, you make it to three straight NLCSs. They're going to be looked at as contention material again next year. They have to be with that young core. So yeah, it's not all gloom and doom here.
No, as it shouldn't be. No. Of course, that core is awesome. I picked them to repeat as champions, which is very hard to do, but that's how much I love the core of players. Schwarber in left is a disaster, but Schwarber at the plate is always money, potential, you know, big-time slugging presence, big-time on-base presence. So that's the same dilemma they've had ever since they brought him up. Because the catcher thing is not going to happen at all. He's no. Even as bad as he is in left field, he's even worse behind the plate.
Right.
But they do need speed at the top of the lineup. They do need the real center fielder. They miss Dexter Fowler more than they probably thought they would.
I think they know that.
They definitely won't admit it, but they definitely need a center fielder and some speed at the top of the order. And I'm sure they will address that in the offseason. And obviously they have to address middle and set up relief, because Joe Maddon has won a World Series with a bullpen that he has not liked. He hasn't trusted hardly anyone in his bullpen except for whoever's at the back end pretty much the whole time he's been in Chicago. So you would assume that they would do something and fix that as well coming up next season. But think about it. They're in the National League Championship Series. There's not a whole lot of big-time tweaking they need to do, because this is a team that's already in the NLCS. This is a team that's already that good that they went through however many games they played in October last year to win the World Series, went all the way to 7 games, came all the way back this year, had the slow start, the slow first half, and still managed to put it together enough to win a division and make it to the NLCS. They're going to be there every year. This is obviously, as we've said over and over again, and it's not a surprise, this is a team set up to contend for the championship every year, not just hope to be good enough to maybe sneak into the playoffs. This is a World Series perennial contending squad every single year for as long as they decide to keep this core together. And those few tweaks, I think, are pretty obvious, and I think they know it, and they're going to do what they got to do to try to make those fixes next year. So, and it's not over yet. Technically, the season is not over yet.
It's still ninth inning. They can
everyone
may be force game five here.
Observation that Theo Epstein knows what it takes to lead a team back from 3-0. Now, Theo doesn't really have anything to do with it. The Cubs come back and knock off the Dodgers 4 in a row. But it would be unbelievable if it did happen. And if it happened twice, both times under Theo Epstein, whether he has much to do with it or not, I think that makes him a first ballot Hall of Famer, in my opinion, because that would be absolutely unfucking believable if it did happen again.
Yeah, and we would see. I mean, if the Cubs come back and win tonight, they're down 3-1. So let's say they're down 3-1 in the series if they don't blow this game here tonight. If the Dodgers kind of show their hand here and go back to the top of the rotation again for game five, that would almost be a sign to me that, you know, maybe they do have that fear of the Cubs coming back if they try to go right back to the ace for the shutdown game to put them away in game five. You'd think you'd save your best two pitchers for home. You know, I don't know if they're going to go Kershaw, Hill, and then have potentially, if it gets to a game seven, and go Darvish again for game seven. I could almost see them throwing throw somebody out there, start game five, because you want to have your guys ready to go at home, unless they really want to go with Kershaw, unless the Cubs blow it tonight, which is still not out of the realm of possibility.
I'm looking at the schedule, and it's tomorrow night is scheduled to be Clayton Kershaw versus Jose Quintana. And I think that's the right move. I think you just send Kershaw out there and say, shut this shit down right now. Don't worry about it. And we'll figure out game one of the World Series later. And just right now, sew this up, because we don't want the Cubs even thinking, sniffing possibility of any kind of comeback. We want to shut it down right now.
Yeah, especially considering that they've had zero offense in this series. So the last thing you want to do is give them any glimmer of hope.
Right.
At all. You give them any hope, and they could just all of a sudden, you know, they could do like they did in the World Series. They weren't scoring any runs. They scored 10 runs in the first five games of that series, and then they scored 17 runs in the last two.
And all of a sudden, here they came.
Yeah, so we shall see. But Wade Davis's arm is about to fall off. That's all I know.
Well, we'll get out of here before that happens. So Saturday night at 9 o'clock is good for you?
That should be good.
All right, Saturday night at 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern to make the rest of our picks for Week 7. In the NFL, where we both tried to get off the schneid, is that 2 weeks in a row we both been under 500? I believe so.
Over.
I was only. Oh, there you go.
Cubs win.
Cubs win. Cubs win.
Cody Bellinger hits into a double play. So they live to play another day.
And by the time we come back Saturday night, and it might be a very, very, very interesting NLCS. We shall see, I suppose.
Yeah, if this thing is still going Saturday, Saturday night would be Saturday during the day would be game six, potentially.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if we get to show and this series isn't over, that means we're headed into a game seven on Sunday. So, stranger things have happened.
Yes, they have. All right. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you all for listening. And we'll be back Saturday night, 9 p.m. Central, with the rest of Week 7 picks in the National Football League. And boy, it's got to go better than it's been going lately. Let's just put it that way. We'll talk to you then.